All right, so we're going to be diving into this Andrade v. NAACP of Austin case today.
Okay.
And this 2011 case from the Texas Supreme Court, it really gets into some pretty fundamental questions we have about elections. Like
Yeah.
who actually has the right to sue when they think something's off about the voting technology and what kinds of arguments they can make. It's like trying to understand the rule book for
Right.
challenging how we vote here in Texas, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
So we're going to break down the details of the specific voting machines that were at the center of this whole thing,
Okay.
the arguments made by the NAACP and others involved, and then, of course, we'll get into how the Texas Supreme Court ultimately ruled on it.
Sounds good.
But here's what I think is super interesting about this case.
Okay.
It really touches on this like core issue of voter confidence, like how secure do you feel about your vote?
Right.
And how much faith do we have in the fairness of the whole system? And our mission here is to kind of extract the most important insights from this case for you and break down all that legal jargon
Okay.
so we can all really understand what this means for election law going forward.
Well, and what's fascinating to me about this case is it highlights this tension in our legal system when it comes to elections. It's about balancing that need for voters to have access to courts when they have legitimate concerns, but also, preventing the courts from getting bogged down in these like generalized disagreements over policy. It forces us to ask, like, what exactly constitutes an actual injury?
Like a concrete, legally recognizable
All right,
injury.
exactly.
So let's get into it. So back in 2011, the NAACP of Austin, along with Sonia Santana, who was a voter, and David Van Os, who was a candidate for attorney general,
Okay.
they filed a lawsuit against the Texas Secretary of State Esperanza Andrade, and their main issue was with the Hart-Islet system.
Okay.
This voting machine was being used in Travis County, and it didn't produce an individual paper record for every vote.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So what was their like fundamental problem with that?
Well, their central argument was that because the East Lake didn't create this paper trail, it violated their statutory right to recounts and audits. But also some pretty fundamental constitutional protections as well.
Like what kind of protections?
Well, things like equal protection under the law, the idea of a pure and accurate ballot, and even the right to vote itself. And as you can imagine, that lack of a physical record raises a lot of concerns about the accuracy and the verifiability of election outcomes.
I mean, it definitely shakes public trust in the system if you can't double check the results, right?
Absolutely.
But Secretary Andrade didn't just let this lawsuit go unchallenged, right?
No, not at all. She had a pretty strong legal defense.
What did she argue?
Well, she put forward two main arguments. First, she said the plaintiffs didn't even have the legal right to bring this case to court. That'll be called standing,
Standing.
which is a super critical first hurdle in any lawsuit. And her second argument was that she had sovereign immunity.
So that's the idea that the state and its officials are generally protected from certain lawsuits, right?
Exactly. It basically means that you can't just sue the government or government official for anything they do. And in this case, Andrade was arguing that as the Secretary of State, she was carrying out her official duties by certifying voting machines, so she should be protected from this lawsuit.
Okay, so initially the trial court actually sided with the plaintiffs and let the case move forward, but then the Texas Supreme Court stepped in and kind of reversed that decision, right?
They did for the most part.
Okay, so let's talk about standing for a second, because the court said the plaintiffs did have standing to make an equal protection argument,
Right?
which seems interesting to me. So why was that one treated differently?
Well, the court's logic here was pretty interesting. They said because the plaintiffs claimed the Eastlade system could potentially have errors or fraud, and that this could impact the accuracy of their own individual votes, that was enough to give them standing for the equal protection claim, but only for that one.
So it wasn't just like a general worry about the election system.
Right.
They were saying this specific technology could directly impact them.
Exactly. They had a plain, direct, and adequate interest in the case.
But they didn't have standing on some of their other arguments,
Correct.
like a statutory right to a recount and the whole idea of ballot purity.
Right.
So why not those?
Well, this is where the idea of generalized grievances comes in, you see. The court said that these concerns about a recount or ballot purity weren't unique to these plaintiffs. They were concerns shared by all voters in Texas. And because of that, the court basically said these are issues that should be addressed by the legislature.
Okay.
Or through the political process, not through individual lawsuits.
So to have standing in court, you really need to show you've suffered a unique harm, not just a general concern shared by lots of people.
Exactly.
Got it.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's talk about sovereign immunity. So we said that generally protects state officials, but how did that play out in this case?
Well, it did protect Secretary Andrade from the claims based on state law, like the statutory right to a recount.
Okay.
Because she was acting within her authority when she certified those machines.
Makes sense.
However, there's a really important exception here. The constitutional claims, specifically the equal protection claim,
mm-hmm.
those weren't blocked by sovereign immunity.
So that protection isn't absolute.
Right. The court basically said that state officials can't use sovereign immunity to shield themselves from lawsuits that say they violated someone's constitutional rights.
Even if they're doing their job.
Even then.
Interesting.
So that creates a check on their power.
Makes sense.
Yeah.
So the equal protection claim was still in play. So how did the court analyze whether the paperless system actually violated that?
Well, they used what's known as the Burdick v. Takushi test.
Okay.
Which is a framework for deciding if a law that regulates voting is constitutional or not. And it basically works on a sliding scale. So if a voting law is a serious burden on someone's right to vote, then it's subject to strict scrutiny.
Yeah.
Meaning the state needs a really good reason for having that law.
Right.
But if the burden is less serious and the rule is generally fair, then it just needs to serve an important state interest.
Okay, so where did they put these paperless machines on that scale?
Well, the court decided that using paperless voting machines in and of itself wasn't a severe burden on the right to vote.
Okay.
They said that Texas has a legitimate interest in modernizing its elections.
Right.
And that these machines could even make voting more accessible for some people.
That's true.
And importantly, they also said that the plaintiffs hadn't shown any hard evidence of actual fraud or disenfranchisement that was directly caused by the e-slate system.
Right.
So without that kind of proof, the court wasn't convinced that it violated equal protection.
So basically, they're giving the state some leeway in how they run their elections.
Right. As long as the rules aren't severely restricting voting rights and they serve a legitimate purpose.
So unless there's some clear evidence of a serious problem, the courts aren't going to step in and tell the states exactly what technology to use.
Right.
So what are the big takeaways here from this case for the listeners?
Well, I think there are three really important things to remember. First, if you want to challenge a voting system in court,
yeah,
you'll probably need to show that you personally were harmed in some way, not just that you disagree with the policy.
Right. You need that standing.
Exactly.
Hmm.
Second, even though state officials have some protection from lawsuits under sovereign immunity, that protection isn't unlimited.
Mm-hmm.
They can still be sued if they violate someone's constitutional rights, even if they're just doing their job.
So there are limits to that immunity.
Right. And third, the courts tend to give states a decent amount of flexibility in how they run their elections.
Right.
As long as those rules aren't restricting voting rights and they make sense.
Yeah, they have a purpose.
Right. So this case really shows the balance between making sure elections are fair and secure and respecting the decisions made by state legislatures.
So what does this all mean for you, Andrade V, in NAACP? Gives us a really fascinating look at the legal challenges involved in going after voting technology.
It does.
You see how standing and sovereign immunity act as these barriers to even getting into court,
mm-hmm.
and how courts have to weigh constitutional rights against the practical side of actually running elections.
Right.
And it also shows us that while voters can and should raise concerns about voting systems,
of course,
the bar for actually getting the courts involved is pretty high.
Yeah, you need to show that you were personally and directly harmed, not just a general disagreement with the way things are done.
So it really leaves us with some questions to think about, like, how does this framework shape the debates we're having right now about election security and voter access?
That's a great question.
And what kind of injuries could be enough to challenge future voting technologies?
Yeah, like what will the courts consider a strong enough argument in the future?
These are all really crucial questions, and they're definitely still evolving as our world changes.
Absolutely they are, and it's
yeah.
something we need to keep an eye on for sure.
For sure. All right, well, thank you so much for joining me for this deep dive. I think that was a really insightful look at a really important case.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
And for all of you listening, thanks for tuning in, and we'll see you next time.